Play. Kids love it. Brains need it. But people don't always understand it. Here to help explain it, your hosts, Keisha and Heather. They're knee-deep in play.
Okay, we are back for another episode of Knee Deep in Play. And I Hi, Keisha.
Hey, Heather. How are you?
I'm good. I was terribly worried you could hear my dogs chewing those bones in the background. Anyway, so we're using this new recording software, so I hope it's going to work out okay. Our executive producer, Jeff, says we're going to have much better sound quality. Not that we've had an overwhelming amount of emails or texts or anything about our sound quality, but he is the expert, and so we defer to his knowledge. So if you are enjoying quality, crisp sound, thank Jeff.
And if thank you, Jeff.
And if it doesn't record, we'll just try. We'll go back to the other thing. So what I was sharing with Keisha for an idea for this episode, we were sort of playing around with some words, looking at the word chaos and how it applies to classrooms, to play-based classrooms, because of something I experienced the other day. And I don't really think either Keisha or I are loving the word chaos, probably because parents who perhaps aren't in the know sometimes use it. So for me, it's a bit of a negative word, but the other day when I was walking through the classrooms, usually when I first get to the program has been in full swing for 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours. And so before I tackle my desk, I like to sort of walk through. And so that morning I was strolling through all the rooms. And at that hour, a lot of rooms, they're having morning snack, or depending upon the weather, some of them might be outside. So this particular room, Dan Hodgins was in my mind, because we are bringing him to Nova Scotia very soon and hosting a conference with him. And so I have put it out to him to ask if he would come and spend a day or two with us in our classrooms. He hasn't answered yet, but it was definitely in my subconscious, not in my conscious. But as I was walking through, looking at this room, looking at the kids, saying good morning. So I enter the Vivacity room. And my very first thought was, because usually my first thought would be, okay, so my first thought would be like, awesome, oh my God, so great, I'm loving what's happening in this room. And then often my thought would be, oh, if parents came in this room, prospective parents who do not know anything about play-based approach, they would think, what the heck is this? What a mess. What kind of chaos is this? Where's the door kind of thing? And I'd have to do a lot of parent education, which it would be worth it. And I would certainly be up to the task. But the strangest thing was that I didn't think either of those things. What I instantly thought was, oh my God, this would be Dan's favorite room. Like if Dan were here visiting us right now and he had walked through and said, hey, how's everybody going? He would have walked in and he would have just plunked himself down, or perhaps maybe just stood back and just taken it all in, because it was amazing. So I'm going to take a pause to let you talk, Keisha, but then I would like to describe.
No, I want to know what you saw. That's why I'm so quiet. I'm like waiting to hear what it was you saw.
Oh my God, my dogs are just as excited by this story. Obviously. Yeah. Okay, guys, that's enough. Poconos. So anyway, so I walked in And like I'm actually not in the room. I'm just in the doorway. And right away to the right are the big giant. I'm so sorry about the dogs. I really am. I would think that they'd be asleep by now. Everyone else in my house is asleep. So immediately to the right is all of the big giant wooden hollow blocks. Like the big ones that are so noisy and they're so expensive, but that's okay. And there's some boys playing with them, and they've built their, I don't know if they were building a structure or a dwelling so much as they were just, well, they were obviously just building, but it was a little haphazard, little precarious. The pieces were placed precarious. So then directly beside it, like with barely any space whatsoever, was a swing hanging from the ceiling. And we have those in all of our classrooms, but you can, because of the way they're hung up, you can take them down, you can have them hanging up. So there's a swing hanging there, a net, cargo net swing. And there's a girl in it, and she's swinging in big, big arcs back and forth. And she's pretty much swinging really close back and forth towards her structure. But she's not hitting it, and the boys don't seem to mind at all. Like, they're not paying her any attention, and they're just doing their thing, and so is she. She almost looks like a pendulum, though, like she could hit the stuff. So then over to the left, I turn to the left, and in the area that's more, it's got like, you know, dishes and a couch and table and chairs and stuff. I'm trying not to label things, so I'm not going to say dramatic play area, just more like the home area. There's a couch, and there's two boys laying on the couch. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. They have their legs up in the air, and they have their bums or their butts facing outwards towards the main part of the area. Then there's another boy who has a broom, and he's poking them in the butt. And they're laughing their heads off. And the guy with the broom is laughing, and the guys with their butts there, fully dressed, of course, they're laughing their heads off. And that's just absolute happiness and giddiness. They're talking back and forth. And I didn't have to say, are you guys okay with this? Because as
you knew they were okay.
It was very obvious that they were okay with it. And then in the middle of the room, there was a teacher by herself, picking up some loose parts, and she had a big, beautiful smile on her face, like she was so happy to be right where she was and happy that everybody in the room seemed to be enjoying themselves and experiencing things and exploring. Up in the loft were some girls reading some books. Around the corner in one of our, we call them whip-offs, but it's like a little area with a little half wall. In that area was another teacher, and she had open snack going on, and there was some lovely conversation going on while some kids were munching on some stuff. And then there were some kids doing a puzzle or two or three over in another corner. But the noise level wasn't too bad. Tracy was one of the last teacher, because there were three teachers in the room. She was at the counter, very quietly and astutely just taking a couple pictures of the kids with the big blocks and the swinger going back and forth. So I just kept thinking that Dan would just love the room. It was just, I think he certainly would have loved the broom poking those two boys and the boys laughing their heads off. And then the swing, I think Bev would have just, I mean, I know Bev and Michael always talk about how much they love swings. The fact that she was just going back and forth and they were doing their thing. Because I know at Bev's program and Michael's program, I'm going to have to get used to not saying Bev's program anymore. But they have indoor swings, but they have outdoor swings. And the outdoor swings are right in the middle of the playground. Like, there's no defined space around them, which I loved, right? Because here in Nova Scotia, there's very strict rules about outdoor swings, but there are no rules for indoor swings, knock on wood.
Don't say that too loud.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully the powers that be don't listen to podcasts. So yeah, so there's my description.
Well, that kind of fits perfectly to what I wanted to talk about. When you mentioned to me this feeling you got when you walked into the classroom, it immediately brought me back to the story of the grandmother who came in, you know, right in the heat of things with children, playing and running and climbing and jumping and laughing and building and knocking down structures and all those things like what you just described. And she walked in and was very like, why isn't this happening? Why isn't that happening? Why isn't that child cleaning up? You know, she had lots of questions. And to this day, I am so happy that I answered those questions. And I'm so happy that she left me and went home and did some research and called me back and registered. Well, she started yesterday with her grandson, and she is totally, I mean, she has done her research. She is totally sold. She totally understands and gets it. Not only that, but her daughter, who is the child's mother, she's like, she had to originally had to convince her after reading the research and listening to me that this is what was right. And she said, after one day of school, and seeing the documentation from that one day was enough for mom to say, okay, thank you. This is right for my child. I understand now. Like, I get it. I get all the things you were trying to explain to me. I get it. And to hear that and to know that makes it so worth having that dialogue with a parent or family who may not totally be comfortable the first time they walk in and see real play. Because you have to think, it might be something they haven't seen since they themselves were four. You know? So it could be scary. It could be scary. It could be loud. It could be noisy. It's definitely not the same as a photograph. When you see it live and in person and multiple things, like you had a towel swinging, children building with blocks, you know, poking, you know, the broom poking and the giggles, all those different sounds and that different movement and that different risk that's going around could be scary to some people who don't understand it. A flip side to that story is a family who came to tour and they had the opposite. They did not sign up. They instead opted for another local program that is much more, let's say, much less chaotic, if that's the word we're going to go with. So a program that's more academic-based, more traditional preschool, where you do worksheets and there's a theme and, you know, a color of the day, a letter of the day, that type of program. And she called me last week before last.
Oh, saying, just one second. I'm so sorry. Hold on just one second. I just have to, oh God, wait, I feel nauseous. Oh, am I going to throw up? Oh, okay. No, it's okay. I've got it under control. Go ahead.
She called me and she said, I made the wrong choice. And she explained to me why. And her reasoning is, her child, who is 4 years old, does not want to go to school. He says he's dumb. He struggles with the worksheets. He said he doesn't want to do the worksheets. And they will send home worksheets for homework. His mom said, she said, you know, one day I'm finding myself fighting with him to do this worksheet. And then I just said, why? Why am I doing this? And she noticed that it wasn't just that he didn't want to do worksheets. She said his whole view of himself had changed. It's only been a few months. His entire view of himself had changed. He now sees himself as someone who's not smart and someone who struggles and someone who's, frankly, he's not happy.
This is preschool that's sending home worksheets?
Yes, and it's not unheard of. And at first, I think parents think it's cute, and it's funny. I've had parents ask me to send home. Oh, he wants homework like his big brother. And they don't understand that. He doesn't want real homework. But he might want to pretend like he's in school. He might want to play school. But he doesn't want nor need actual homework. So I try to explain that to parents. And most times they get that and it works out fine. But in this case, the parent, I guess she had to experience it and let her child experience it and see that it was not, it wasn't the right thing for them. So on the other hand, I want to talk about, and I want to ask you this question. Is there a place or point where it is chaos in the negative sense? Is there a line that can be crossed? And if so, what are the indicators when you walk into a space, not even just when you walk into a space, when you are a teacher in a space or an administrator in a space, what is the point where the line is crossed? When do you say, okay, we need to bring this back a little bit? Is there a point for you?
Well, I know that we have tried in many, many, many ways to really embrace roughhousing and rough and tumble play. I believe in all of the benefits of it. I believe, you know, everything that I read about it, particularly certainly Bev and Michael Stoff, but all, you know, Dan's whole book on boys and I mean, girls sometimes want to roughhouse as well. But
I was going to say, I have the roughest girls ever since I have opened in the town I'm in. I don't know if it's the town. I don't know what it is. But I have the roughest, strongest, smartest, you know, really know what they want girls. And they break every stereotype that's out there, from the whole girls are fancy princesses and not superheroes, to girls don't want to get dirty, to girls don't roughhouse. They break all those stereotypes because they're some tough chicks. But I'm sorry to cut you off. There's some tough chicks. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So we certainly embrace the concept, but we have not yet been able to. There's so many things that we embrace and we do completely. You know, like letting children be barefoot in and out. Obviously not in snowbanks, but, you know, barefoot and using real tools and giving real, authentic, real life experiences. But when it comes to roughhousing and rough and tough kinds of play, we've tried to have areas where the children can wrestle. And we still need to really work on it. I know mm-hmm. some other programs that do it really, really well. And I think probably what would be great is if Dan did a workshop or had a staff meeting with us, because some of the staff that went to some sessions on rough and tumble play, they came back and they had very black and white ideas. And the black and white ideas were, okay, sort of everything is good. You know, every kind of rough, this is just baffling for me because my whole house is asleep and usually both of these dogs at this hour of the night are sound asleep. So unless they're just finding our podcast so exciting, I'm really quite baffled by it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it sounds good with the words rough and tumble, but it was like the teachers, they heard what was said about rough and tumble and they just took it to the extreme. So unless, you know, when I come to the pep rally and I get to visit your program, oh, wait, I'm coming on a weekend, aren't I? And then this other program that I know that does it really, really well. There are some in Halifax that do it really well. But I think maybe I'll have to ask if Dan has time while he's here to just be able to do a workshop with us, because sometimes you and I have talked about how, like, if a presenter or an early childhood idol or rock star or whatever we want to call them, the Jeff Johnsons or Lisa Murphys of our field, say, you must do this, right? And which they're saying it like that because it's an important message. And it is something that children deserve and children need to have, and best practices indicate it. But it is important for the people listening to go away and take that concept and that idea and really think about it. And think about
yes.
Where did it come from, and how does it really apply? It can't just be like, you know, you can't just...
How does it apply to my program?
Mm-hmm. You can't write it in concrete and just say, we have to do this because, right? So...
Because so-and-so said. Yes, and I'm glad you said that, because that is... something that I actually talked with, a conversation I had with my staff not too long ago. And I think that we do a good job with that, but we've also, I guess I know when I'm going into it, when I say, okay, this is something that we're going to try. We're going to try it because I've looked at it, it makes sense, I think it's going to work, let's try it. I agree with you. Never written in stone. We're all on a journey. This is a living, breathing, we consider our program a living, breathing, you know, almost a person. Like this thing is, you know, encompassing the ideas of lots and lots of people, and that includes the children, the families, and the staff. So it's not a statue. You know, it's something that's always moving and changing. And what we do with our program might change from, you know, year to year based on the families and the children that we have. Not drastically. I mean, there's some things that are developmentally going to be right always. But then there are those things that you try and they don't work. They don't work for your particular group. So you try to figure out, okay, why isn't this working? How can we do it differently? What parts of this aren't working? You know, and play around with it until it works for the group. And one of those things is that we kind of did the fiddle with was cleanup. And when you said the, you know, concrete, children do not clean up. Well, in our case, it didn't work. And it wasn't because the room wasn't getting cleaned. Who cares about that? That's our job anyway. At the end of the day, whether the children help us clean up during the day or not, at the end of the day, there's still a whole entire room that needs to be cleaned. That's not an issue. None of us have a problem with that. I think in that situation, it has more to do, well, for us, it has more to do with the issue being how people are forcing children to clean up or punishing children for not cleaning up. But I do not have a problem with modeling cleaning in front of children, offering a child a basket for their trucks when they're done, or asking who'd like to sweep the floor, or pouring out milk and asking who wants to be the milk helper for the day, or who wants to put away the cups, or who wants to whatever it may be, because it's our community and together we help. But if you would have asked me this a year ago, I probably would have said, no, cleaning up is not for children to do, the adults will do it, you know, yada, yada, yada. Well, after attempting that, and I gave it a good try for a long time, at the end of it, what I found and what my staff found and what we discussed was that our children seemed to almost not care about their stuff anymore. They just didn't care. And if something spilled, they would say, Miss Marika will do it. Oh, that's broken. Oh, you'll buy another one. It just was a different feeling. It didn't feel like a group of children who were, like, working together to take care of our space, our community space. And I don't know if it was, I mean, part of it was we weren't even modeling cleaning in front of them. We weren't even giving them the opportunity to walk up to us and say, can I sweep? Because what we did was we would send them outside, at, you know, for outside time, and maybe two teachers would go out and one would stay behind, clean everything, and then we'd come in and have lunch. And it was like, this magical thing where all of a sudden our morning mess was gone. And all I kept, that nagging thing in my voice, you know, in the back of my head, that nagging voice was the idea that I remember growing up And my mom would clean my room. Like, I would go to a friend's house for the weekend, and I'd come back, and my bedroom would be thick and thin. I remember getting ready to open the door and thinking, I hope it's clean, I hope it's clean, and opening it, and it would be clean. And I'd be like, yes, yes. To this day, I open my bedroom door, and I'm like, I hope someone cleaned it. Someone. It's not going to happen. And I'm not saying that to say children need to learn to clean their room. I think children need to be having the opportunities to see me doing it. They need to have the opportunity to join me if they'd like. I think children love their things and want to take care of their things. So it's not, to me, an issue with cleaning up. I think it's an issue with, are you making it a negative? Is it a bad time of the day? And that was my issue. That's what got me to say, wait a minute, maybe they shouldn't be cleaning up. Because it was a negative. I've worked in programs where it was a negative, and it was a bad part of our day. And it was 30 minutes to an hour of a teacher saying, you didn't clean up this, clean up that. And that's not what taking care of our space looks like now in my classroom. And I know I went off on a tangent, but that really got me. That really got me going. But it's true. You have to look at what works in your program and also with child development. What's appropriate? And then within that umbrella, now what works? How can I have this appropriate thing work well in my setting?
Well, you can
go. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You can go. There could be five of you from one program, and you go to a conference, and you're all sitting there in the same exact session.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're in the same session listening to the same presenter. And each of you is receiving very different messages because you've got mm-hmm. you've got your own childhood that you experienced that the presenter is speaking to. Because your childhood is always with you. How you were parented and how you are parenting, if you are a parent, that's always happening. In addition to that, you may only be working at one program and maybe you were green and new and that was the only program you've ever worked at. So you're sort of, you know, fresh, like a fresh mind where things can grow and take root. Whereas the people next to you, maybe they've worked at like four or five centers where everything they ever tried was shut down. They were constantly mm-hmm. told no. So everyone is taking in different messages. So it's so, 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 so important that when you go back to the program, if there's any possible way in the daily operations or somehow to have some kind of decompression of what was learned, what messages were learned,
yeah.
what resonated.
What did you hear?
Why did it resonate? What did you perceive that to mean? Because everybody, that's one conversation Bev and I had had one time, and she said, I am so tired of saying the same things all the time. And she looked at me and she looked exhausted. And she goes, I'm just tired of it. Why am I still after decades telling people to do this, this, and this? And I said to her, you know that every time someone listens to you, they're only hearing a very small percentage. I mean, certainly statistically, there's that whole thing about how much body language says and how much your body, you know, how much is actually your voice and your intonation. But I said, Bev, in addition to all of that and their experiential filter, like what they've experienced growing up and in their careers, you have another whole obstacle, Bev, which is you are Bev Boss. And people are sitting there and they're thinking, oh my gosh, I finally get to hear Bev Boss. I said, that is an obstacle that prevents them from getting your messages. And, you know, it's really, really important that, like, you can sign someone up. Like you just said, I mean, I might sign my staff up. Dan Hodgins is coming to Halifax. We're all going to go. We're all going to learn about roughhousing. And then it would be ridiculous for me to think that everybody's going to come back to the program and we're all going to be on the same page. That's mm-hmm. not going to happen. There has to be
a conversation, like you said, what did you call it? A decompression?
Well, yeah, when you first leave a conference, if it's a good one, Jesus only knows that's an important, that is an, I'm sorry I said Jesus, but I'm looking at heaven, heaven help us all, because if you've come back from a bad one, then there's no deconstructing of the information required. It's just what you have to do is find a toilet and flush the handle, because you got to get rid of all that crap as soon as possible. If possible, just walk out on the session, because I know that that's rude, but you can't.
I've had to do that.
You got to.
You can't bite your tongue very hard, you know.
You gotta walk out. Pretend you have the diarrhea or something if you're worried about being rude. Oh, I gotta go. It's fun because you can't listen to that stuff. But if it's a good one, you know, you leave and you're high from it. You've got a natural high. You're like, oh my God, I can't wait to do this. It's so good.
Uh-huh. I can't wait to get back into the classroom.
And you just, you know, then you can't make a plan. You have to be able to make a plan, and you have to touch base with everyone else. And because you all have different personalities, maybe your co-teacher is a person that really needs to mull, and they need to think, and they have like a million questions, whereas you're the type of person, you just want to just do it. No, we have to do it yesterday, right? Like, so If you don't have a plan, an implementation plan, I mean, it doesn't have to be a thesis, for God's sake. There has to be some communication, and, you know, write down some ideas and sort of have a little brief staff meeting about, what do you think of this, and where should we go from here? And if it doesn't even work out, that's okay. Have another staff meeting and say, okay, well, we tried, you know, we still really believe in that message. And for us, A, B, and C didn't work. Quick, let's email Lisa Murphy and ask her what the hell she really meant. Or, you know, I mean, it's not like these ECE presenters don't want the communication or the feedback or the questions. They do. We do. Mm-hmm. We always say every podcast, let us know what you think.
Well, that's what we do. After, like, we'll let's say we're the topic cleanup. We'll discuss it, and we'll discuss what are your opinions, what are your views, what are the, you know, we kind of tell the story, like talk about our childhood, talk about where our point of view is coming from. And then once we all agree on a plan of action and how we're going to try it, we try it. If we're going to do something, we're doing it because we think that it's the best thing for the children. And we're going into it with that in mind. I think that anytime you go into something and you're kind of like it, I think that's the important part about having buy-in from the staff. Because if they're going into it like, you know, and they don't agree with it, or they don't believe in it, and they don't see the value in it, then I can tell you already, it's probably not going to go well, because the anchor is already sinking when the leader or the, you know, the person who is presenting this new way doesn't believe in it. So I think the hardest part, or the most important part, is the part that you talked about, the coming together and the making that plan and talking about what did he mean, how did you feel, you know, what do you think, and sharing those different ideas together about our points of view and coming to a place where we're all can agree, we're all in agreement, we've all decided that this is worth trying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not easy, especially the larger the group.
Finding the time for the meeting, for God's sakes, is challenging. But
would this be something that would take place in, like, what? I'm not speaking about anything in particular, but let's say there was something that you guys were going to change. Would this be something that you're changing in one classroom because the need is there, or are you talking about school-wide?
Oh, well, because we have infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, I mean, it really would, there are some things that would be school-wide, and there are some things that would be just, you know, it could just be the classroom, it could just be one teacher, it really depends on what the thing is, right? And I try to give all the teams as much autonomy as I can. We had a storm day last week, like a snowstorm, and so we opened at 1 p.m., 1 p.m., 12 noon, whatever. So needless to say, we had a very small number of children that day. So, you know, you got to find the silver lining, right? And so the silver lining that day was I had a staff meeting with the senior staff. And it was a really amazing staff meeting about the types of extra curriculum, kind of like, well, I don't know if I should see, I'm going to wind up saying like enhanced curriculum or extra curriculum, and it shouldn't be. The things we talked about things that should be happening every single day. Like your,
yeah, so it shouldn't be extra. It should be the normal.
Right. The woodworking, whatever it's called, mobile woodworking,
machine,
the sewing machine, the, what were some of the other, the indoor shop vac that the kids use, the, you know, the overhead projectors, the this, that, and the other thing. And of course our plungers. Well, the plungers from the day we bought them, they are used every single day, every single plunger in every single room from infants, toddlers, and preschoolers straight through. You know, how often is the woodworking station being used? Because we only have one woodworking station for the whole center. It's a cart and it travels the center. But then are all the children truly experiencing it? Is it as natural and as organic as it should be? And so we talked about that. We talked about the sewing machine. We talked about all those kinds of things. And for the first time in 20 years, after we were talking about all of it, they wanted a bit more direction towards the end of the conversation. And I said, okay, so I'm leaving now. I'm going into the office to work on the data re-entry that I need to tackle. But I wasn't leaving because I had paperwork to do. I wanted them to discuss mm-hmm. it more and come up with plans and strategies. And it just seemed like a bit of an epiphany kind of moment for me in that, you know, I guess it's, you had used the phrase earlier about buy-in. Well,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, when we had Michael Lehman come and mentor us and build the woodworking station and spend a whole week with us, teaching us about, like, modeling for us about how to use real tools with children and how to saw and do all that stuff with toddlers and preschoolers, the investment was there. And I said, this is what we're doing and this is important and these are the reasons why it's important. But each individual early childhood educator, they have to know in their gut and in their brain and in their hands. Which actually, that gives me an idea that we should spend a staff meeting actually woodworking ourselves. So I'm going to have to write that down.
Mm-hmm.
So I left, and you know what? They continued to meet and brainstorm and come up with strategies and plans for another hour and a half. Because I, you know,
awesome.
Awesome. I don't necessarily want to pray for another blizzard, but it was pretty awesome, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my goodness,
and this
conversation is now, that's 40 minutes. Keisha, we've talked for 40 minutes now.
Wow. Well, we're going to go, you guys, and we don't know what we're going to name this because it's a, what do they call it, a smorgasbord.
It is
a good mix.
Because initially it was going to be chaos, and then while we were talking, I thought, okay, so it's chaos, and then we talked about concrete ideas, and that it was chaos, concrete, cleanup, conferences, and then so smorgasbord, however you say that word is a really good title.
Smorgasbord. I don't know how to spell it either, so. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks, everybody, for listening.
This has been Knee Deep in Play. Join us next week for another episode. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.